alcohol. My name is Debbie and I am an alcoholic. Our fifth tradition states that our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Valley Group honors this tradition by rigorously searching for the finest recovery speakers in the Western Hemisphere so that they can share their experience, strength, and hope with us. Each week, we recognize one of these speakers for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is now time to recognize Valley Group's Outstanding Speaker of the Week. The nominee for this category has a sobriety date of February 2nd, 2004.
One day at a time.
She has been continually in service or has held service positions such as secretary, GSR, prayer chair for
ACIPA.
I wasn't sure if I was going to say that, as well as being a sponsor to many women. And her AA motto is, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I like that. So now, the moment we've been waiting for all day, may I have the envelope, please? All right. The winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week award is Kathy H. from Fresno.
I guess so.
All right. Thank you. I'd like to thank you all for this award. I'm Kathy. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Bill for asking me to come and share. Can everyone hear me back there? Yeah, I'm loud enough? Okay. I'm a little bit nervous. I guess I shouldn't be since I don't know any of you, and it's like you don't know my story, so if it's not the truth, you won't know any different. But I have one person out there that's going to keep me honest, so, and God, yeah. My sobriety date is February 1st, 2004, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous. That wasn't always the case. It wasn't where I wanted to end up. I didn't grow up thinking, you know, I hope that I'm an alcoholic so I could end up in AA, but that's kind of my story. And I'm just like, my heart's just like fluttering, but I will calm down. So I remember when I first got here, one of the first things that I heard in a meeting was that you're only as sick as your secrets. And I thought I would never make it here because my whole life was a big secret. I grew up in Fresno. I was born and raised there, and my childhood was one of those really dark childhoods that you just don't talk about. And there are six brothers and sisters. I've had an alcoholic mother, and there were six dads. So my mom's story was that she would drink, and she would go out on a bender, and then she would come home, and then 9 months later there would be a new brother or sister, and a new daddy, and even though my mom was a really loving mom, although she was, you know, an alcoholic, she didn't really pick loving men. And so our household was very busy, and there was a lot of physical abuse, there was a lot of mental abuse, and there was a lot of sexual abuse. Growing up, I didn't really know the difference. I thought that was normal. When I started school, I remember wanting to go to friends' house, and I was never allowed to go to friends' houses because if I went there, I would know that there was something wrong with my home. And I could never have friends come over to my house because if they came over to my house, they would know that something was wrong there. So we kept everything very private, and everything was just a great big secret. And when I started kindergarten, I And going to school, it's like I knew that I couldn't talk to the little girls, but I kept it pretty surfacey. And I remember being in school and all the little girls talking about what they wanted to be when they grew up. And, you know, a lot of them knew what they wanted to be. They wanted to be nurses, and they wanted to be princesses, and they wanted to, you know, be housewives. And when they asked me what I wanted to be, I wanted to be a saloon girl. And that was at the age of 5. I mean, I knew it, you know. Now, I'm going to date myself a little bit, but I remember watching Gunsmoke and Miss Kitty. Yeah. She was my idol. I loved her. I thought, you know, I remember watching that. She got to wear beautiful dresses, and she smoked, and she drank, and all the men loved her, and I wanted to grow up and be just like Miss Kitty. And I did end up becoming a bar drinker. Hold on. So, that was like at age 5. At age 7, husband number 6 beat my mom to death in front of all of us kids. And I needed a drink. I needed something to change the way that I felt right then. So I started on my journey. By 9, I drank, and by 12, I put a needle in my arm. And it worked. It worked. I didn't have to feel anymore. I didn't have to think about all the things that went on when I was a child. I didn't have to feel mourn the loss of my mother. I didn't have to do anything. But most of all, I could withdraw into myself. And it's like, and I didn't have to let people get close. And I didn't have to let anyone know me. And I could become anything that I wanted to be. Because when I drank, it's like I could become anything. I could be what you wanted me to be. And it's like, and all of a sudden, you know, I was okay. I was pretty, and I was nice, and I was, even though inside I was freaking dying, you know, I mean, I'm dying as a little child, and it's like, but I could become anything that I wanted to be. And so I became a chameleon. It's like it depended on who I hung around. It's like, you know, I could, you know, if I was with the tough kids, it's like I was a tough kid, you know. I actually went to, I went to school in Vice Area for a little bit, even though I'm from Fresno, because all of us kids got bounced around a little bit, and I have an aunt and uncle that lived here, and so I went my 6th grade year, and then I did Divisadero my 7th and 8th grade year, and then Mount Whitney my freshman and half my sophomore year, and then I got kicked out of Mount Whitney because I kept beating people up. And so if there's anyone in the audience that recognizes me and I beat you up, I'm sorry. Because that's not, you know, that's not who I am today, but I was just a really angry, angry child. And I remember growing up thinking that I was never going to be like my mom. You know, no matter what, it's like I just didn't want to be like my mom. It's like I didn't want to do the things that she did, and I never wanted to raise kids the way that she raised them. And so I tried to be different. But I was a true alcoholic. When I turned 21, I got my first drunk driving. At 21 and a half, I got my second drunk driving. And at 21 and three quarters, I got my third drunk driving. And I just kept going to jail. And they put me in this 5x5 program, and they told me that, that I had a problem with alcohol. And I was like, what? And they said that I needed to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have a sister that's 10 years older than me, and she was like a really mean drunk, and I understood why she needed Alcoholics Anonymous. But I was like a really friendly drunk, so I didn't really understand why I needed it. But when they told me that I had to go to an AA meeting, I called my sister, and I said, you know, they want me to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know how excited people that are already in the program get when someone calls them and wants to take them to a meeting. So she was like, yes, this is really good. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, my world's over. But she came and she picked me up, and she took me into a meeting, and I was just in my early 20s. And And I walked into that meeting and everyone was old and weird and happy to be there. And I'm thinking, what in the hell is going on? You know, I just didn't have a clue what was going on and I didn't want to be there. But I remember, and it's to this day, it's something that I'll never forget, and I still get this feeling when I walk in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. There was a feeling that I felt that I had never felt in my life. It was a totally different feeling, and today I know that feeling was love. You know, I was instantly loved, and it felt good. So I'm like, I was just going to like soak that up. It's like, you know what? It's like, I can do this. You know, I wasn't going to love you back, but it's like, you know, I'm a taker. It's like, that's what I do. And it's like, so I'll take all the love that I can get. And, but at the time, it's like, even though I was, coming in meetings and I wasn't drinking, I was still on the cocaine maintenance program, and it was really hard to sit still in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember my therapist at the time told me, you know, maybe you could stop, you know, doing cocaine and give those meetings like a real try. And I told her, I said, I will do that, but I'm not going to stop smoking pot. I mean, I needed something, you know. So I did that for a while too. So I didn't really come in here like, oh, yay, let's do this deal. And, but I eventually I stopped doing everything and my life got better. You know, I didn't realize that I was still really empty inside. My life got better because I wasn't willing to do any of the work when I got here. I didn't want to, you know, they told me to get a sponsor. I got a blind sponsor. I mean, I thought that was a match made in heaven because I figured she wouldn't be able to see what I was doing anyway. So, I mean, it's a terrible thing. But anyway, and she didn't, it was different than sponsors are now, you know. I mean, that was a long time ago. And it's like, and she didn't really make me work the steps. She just loved on me, you know. It was like, she just loved me. And that was the deal. And somehow, some way, with some of those feelings that you guys gave me and some of those things I heard, I actually stayed clean and sober for 11 years. And after about 3 years, I had stopped going to meetings, and I was like, you know, thank you all very much. You know, I appreciate all the information, but I got this. And then I went out and proceeded to do my life and started working, and I got married. I met this, I was working in this restaurant, and this guy walked in, and he was 4 days out of rehab, and he drove a Jag, and he looked really good in his jeans, and so I married him, and I thought that our life was going to be perfect, and that's not necessarily the case. It was, he never stayed clean, and somehow for the next 10 years of our marriage, I stayed clean, and I continued to put him in and out of rehabs. And it's like, and I believe now when I look back on it that was my new addiction. But during that marriage, I did have a child. And my daughter's name's Kylie. I love her so much. I never knew that I could love like that. I also cry a little bit sometimes when I speak. And a lot of it's out of gratitude. I just didn't know I was going to have this life. My sponsor tells me my story is a story of hope. And that's why I share all of the things that I share. Because it wasn't pretty. It's like, I don't say it for anyone to feel sorry for me or to feel bad. Or it's like, wow, she had a terrible life. It's like, because you know what? If I can fucking do this, so can anyone. Anyone can do it. I'm really tough on my sponsees. They get no pity parties. I don't want to hear your shit. It's like, that's it. And I'm like, whatever. You know what? Let me tell you a story. And then we're going to talk about working the steps, you know, because this is how we save our lives. And it's like, and I'm so grateful for that. After the marriage fell apart, after 10 years, I took my daughter and moved out, and within 2 weeks, I walked into a bar after 11 years and picked up. And not only did I pick up, start drinking, but I started using a lot of other substances. And I stayed out there for 8 years while I was raising my child. And it was, if I thought the first part of my life was dark, of using was dark, it's like that second part. It took me to places I never, ever, I didn't even know they existed, let alone that I would ever go there. I ended up losing my daughter. I lost everything. I lost my daughter. I say lose, but it's not that. I traded her. I traded everything in my life for drugs and alcohol. It became my higher power. It became my lover. It became everything in my life. It's like I got up in the morning to use and to drink, and that was my story. And it's like, and even though my ex-husband was one of us, you know, one day he came to pick up my daughter and he never brought her back. And at that point, my disease just took another turn for the worse. And it's like, and it got really, really bad. You know, I didn't think that I would ever, ever get her back. And then I ended up going to jail, behind drugs and alcohol, and they kept me in there for a few days. And it's like, and then after they let me out, I got really sick and my appendix burst, and I laid in bed for 17 days thinking I had the flu. And by the time I went into the hospital, I was almost dead. And I remember laying in the hospital bed thinking, let me die. I had nothing to live for. It's like I was hopeless. I didn't have my daughter. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a home. I didn't have a car. I didn't have any. I couldn't feel love. I was empty. I was just a shell of a woman. It's like I had nothing. And I didn't care. It's like, just let me die. I remember my sister, who is just an angel in my life, came up to the hospital to see how I was doing. And I just told her, go away. I just want to die. And they let me out of the hospital, and I still had a bag attached to me. It's like I was still really, really sick, and I went down to property, and I picked up my purse from the jail, and they hadn't found all of the drugs in my purse. And I sat down, and I did them, and I tell that story because that's my first step. Because after I did that, I'm sitting there, and I'm higher than a kite, and I got this bag attached to me. I just went to jail. I almost died. I don't have anything to live for. And it's like, and I can't stop using, and I can't stop drinking. And I dropped to my knees. I didn't have a higher power. I didn't believe in God. I wasn't raised to believe in God. We went to church only to keep up the appearances. It's like when we would dress up, like on Mother's Day or Easter, and all the kids would get dressed up, and we'd get new dresses and outfits for the boys and whatever. And it's like, but then we would come home from church and someone would get beat. So I didn't have any respect for any type of organized church or God, because I believed if there really was a God, that there's no way that children would be raised in a family like that. And but I dropped to my knees, and in my childhood, I also had a really, I had imaginary friends that worked for me. I spent a lot of time in my closet, and it's like, and imaginary friends I could talk to and I could also relate to. And so I dropped to my knees and I just said, dude, help me. And I fell asleep. And I got up the next morning and I'm like, thanks, dude. And you know, it sounds really simple, but there must have been a lot of freaking heart put behind it. Because that was my last drink and drug. Because I meant it. I didn't know who dude was. He was my imaginary friend, because that's how my higher power came to me. It's like, because it couldn't come to me the way that it comes to some people. That was my burning bush. And that became my prayer every day. Every day I would just get up and I'd say, dude, help me. And then I'd say thank you before I would go to bed. And it's like, and I would stay clean and sober another day. And this is a girl that had no idea how to not put something in her system on a daily basis. You know, and I was on probation and I was testing and I was jumping through all the hoops that they made me jump through. And I remember going in and seeing my probation officer, and he told me, he says, Kathy, you're doing a good job. He says, but you know what? He goes, AA meetings are part of it. He's like, if you don't go to AA meetings, I'm going to violate you and you're going back to jail. And, you know, it's crazy because in all that time, it's like I never thought about going back to an AA meeting. It's like I kind of thought you guys would be like, where have you been? you know. But when I got back here and walked in the room, it wasn't like that at all. It's like no one knew me, and I didn't know anybody. I was afraid to walk into an AA meeting because I thought they might find me, whoever they are. You know, I thought I was being watched, and I was paranoid, and it's like I was insane by that time. And but what I remember is when I walked into that first meeting again, that I felt that same feeling that I felt like 11 years prior to that, or 19 years prior to that. It's like, you know, I felt love. It's like I walked in and people put their arm around me, and it's like, and told me it was going to be okay and that I never had to drink again. And I was like, this is crazy. And then I listened to what they were saying. I remember sitting in meetings for the first 2 years, and all I did was cry. And I don't mean I cried when I got called on. I cried from the minute I walked in the meeting till the meeting was over. And women would come up to me afterwards and tell me, you're going to be okay. I'm like, really? Because I don't feel like it. And, you know, it was just, I was just this bundle of emotion. And it's like, and I didn't know what to do with it. And I didn't know how to channel it. And, you know, but I listened to what was being said, you know, and I listened to them talk about getting a sponsor and doing the steps. And I remember looking at the steps on the wall and thinking, you're only as sick as your secrets. And I'm like, man, they're telling me that I got to talk about all kinds of shit and I can't do this. Because inside, what I was told as a little girl is that if I told some of these secrets, I was going to die. So my sponsor had a big job ahead of her when I got her. But I remember because of all the stuff that I'd been through that I needed a certain type of sponsor, I felt. And I'm an interior designer, so I'm pretty creative. And this lady was sitting at this table and she was like talking about doing her four-step in a collage. And I was like, oh my God, that is my sponsor right there. Because I'm like, I could be creative. I could do my four-step in a collage. But if you've ever tried to put a feeling into a collage, it's just not that good, nor is it that real. So anyway, I only made it through the first three steps with her. And can I tell you, she walked me through those steps really thoroughly. But when it got time to do a fourth step, it's like I found a different sponsor. And it's like, and the word around the table was she was tough. She was really tough, and I needed someone tough, but that she was going to love me too, you know. But she wasn't going to wrap me up in a blanket and tell me everything was going to be okay, because I knew I was going to die. If I didn't get help, I was going to die. You know, I was going to, and I don't mean just from using drinking. I would literally have died in these rooms if I would not have been willing to work the steps. Because there was so much crap inside of this body, so much unresolved stuff, so much fake feeling, so many old ideas, all that crap. If I wouldn't have someone that was willing to sit down with me and walk me through this so that I could learn how to show a feeling, learn how to, oh my God, there's just so many things that I've learned here. It's like I just get boggled when I start talking about the things that I learned here. But, you know, learn how to be a mom. You know, I learned that here. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to be a mom. You know, and how to be a friend. How to show up for work in appropriate attire. I wore negligees to meetings for the first 2 years, can I just tell you? I mean, that's how I went to the bar. You know, I just wore a negligee and a pair of jeans and heels on. And, you know, it's like, thank God that, you know, people pulled me aside, or women, and said, you know, you might want to change this up a little bit. And it's like, you know, but everyone was, you know, really soft about that. And it's like, you know, they kind of let me, you know. I remember the first time one of my sponsors, because I got sponsors early, and she came over and she's like, you got anything I can wear? And I'm like, oh yeah. And I'm like, so I go and I pull out this little, she's like, isn't that a negligee? And I'm like, you right? And she's like, I'm not wearing that to me. But it's like, see, I was just wrong. I was so wrong when I got here. No one had ever taught, growing up in the family that I grew up in, no one had taught me right from wrong. I didn't know what to do. I mean, so I had to be taught. It was like I was this infant when I got here. And you guys had to teach me everything. I mean everything, from how to talk to how to, you know, how to walk, how to act like a lady. It's like I always thought that I was like a lady, but it's like I wasn't. And it's like, and you know, there was like a lot of tough lessons. But anyway, so I got with this gal to work the steps, and you know, we started on my fourth step, and because I'd already done my 1, 2, 3, and it's like when we got to that fourth step, it was tough. It was really tough. Literally, there would be times when I would be writing, and I would have anxiety attacks because I thought, oh my God, when I have to tell someone this stuff, I'm going to die. Someone's going to kill me or hurt someone that I love. Or, you know, it took a long time to really get to that old ideas part of the steps to where I could see that, you know what, that's not the truth. And so I did my fourth and fifth step, and it's like, and when I took my fifth step, I'm just thinking that this lady is going to look at me and go, oh my God, right? And she was like, is that it? And I'm like, what do you mean, is that it? You know, and she's like, you know what? She's like, that's good. She's like, have you told me everything? Have we gone through everything? And I said, yes, you know, we've gone through everything. And from there, you know, we went into the sixth step. Now, when we got to the character defects, that was really tough for me also, because I didn't think I had any. I didn't know what a character defect was. It wasn't that I didn't think that I had any, but when you start looking at character defects, those were survival skills for me. It's like, so when she's saying, you know, we're going to ask God to remove them, and I'm like, well, first we're talking to dude, not God, and it's like, you know, because for a long time, it's like dude was my higher power, and she says, you know, we're going to, you know, ask God to remove them, and I'm like, you know, I don't know if I want these removed. How am I going to survive? How am I going to go out there? How am I going to be on the streets? And she's like, well, first off, you're not on the streets anymore, you know? And there were hard concepts for me to swallow. So, you know, we took that in little baby steps. You know, she says, you know, she taught me how to take that in baby steps. And it's like, and then we got to, you know, the eighth step, and I did six and seven and got to the eighth step, and I made a list of all the people I had harmed, and it was big, and I was also a thief when I was out there, so there was a lot of financial amends, and I was really good at being a thief, so there wasn't like little baby financial amends. It was like, I mean, it was thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. Now, one of the things that happened in sobriety was that after about a year that I lived with my sister, she had told me that I needed to get a job, because I'm living with her and I need to help out, which I'm like, what? You know, I mean, I hadn't had a job in a long time, and so I thought, okay, I'll appease her and I'll go online and I'll just like apply for some jobs online. And so I did that, and it's like, so I went into the interior design and I just started shooting out resumes, and it's like in the very next day one of my resumes was answered, and they said they wanted to meet with me, and I went and met with them, and they hired me on the spot. These things only happen in Alcoholics Anonymous, let me tell you. Because now I don't have a car. Let me just tell you a little bit about me at that point. That's 2 years, right? I don't have a car. I'm a felon. I'm testing twice a week. I'm in drug treatment. I'm a mess, right? And I'm not going to go, and I have nothing to wear but negligee. So I'm sitting, he's not always the best thing to apply for work in. Was depending on the work. But anyway, so I'm sitting in a meeting and I start crying, and I'm like, you know what, it's like I have this job interview tomorrow and I have nothing to wear. And after that meeting, those women scooped me up and they took me back to their house and they put me in this beautiful Italian suit and they said, you're going to go on this job interview. And I was scared. And I went on the job interview, and I walked in, and they offered me this obscene amount of money, plus commission. He's like, can you sell? I'm like, dude, I've been selling all my life. So they offered me a base pay plus commission, and the reason I tell that story is because when I got to my ninth step and I had all those financial amends, that year I made six figures, and I was able to pay over 30 grand in my financial amends. I remember looking at this, the financial amendment. My sponsor told me, you take one at a time. Just one at a time, you know. And it was like crazy that I got to pay them all that year. And then the next year, I got to buy a house. Now, this is a girl from the wrong side of the tracks that all I ever wanted to do was make it to the right side of the tracks, and I didn't know I was going to have to go via AA. But that's really what happened. It's like, because I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to get to the right side of the tracks. All my ideas were crazy, you know, and but what I learned here was that by right thinking, that I do the right thing, and with honesty, it's like that I can do good things. You know, I can show up for a job. They gave, not only did they offer me an obscene amount of money, first off, I claim to be an interior designer, but I have no formal education. But I'm really good at what I do. And so when I went in there, it's like, you know, I'm basically like kind of just, I'm selling myself. It's like, yeah, I can do this. I can do, you know, it's like I just was, you know, telling them that I could do all of this. And it's like, and then I got in there and they're like, well, we not only do we want to hire you, but we're opening an office in Fresno. We want you to open it, design it, and run it. I left that interview so freaking scared. All I wanted to do was take off that stupid Italian suit and run for the hills. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this, you know. And then now, okay, I need a car. I need a car to get to work. And it's like, and I like to tell these stories because these are like the little God shocks and the miracles that like happen in my sobriety. It's like, so I'm in drug treatment and my counselor really likes me and he knows I'm doing the deal. And I'm like, I don't have a car. I don't even have a car to get to work. What am I going to do? Go on my bicycle, because I do have a pink bike with a basket that I kept my big book in and go to meetings. And I'm like, you know, I don't have a car. And he says, go to this place. I go, I have no credit. And he's like, just go there, tell him I sent you. So I go there, and I apply for a loan, and the guy comes back, and he's like, I've never seen a credit score of like zero. I mean, I have no credit score. You know, I'm like, so does that mean I don't get the car or what? I mean, I was really scared, but you know what? For some reason, it's like I ended up walking off that lot with a car. And so now I had a car to get to work. You know, and every time I call my sponsor, I'd be like, you're never going to guess what happened. And I'd be so excited. And she called them little God shocks, you know. And I've had a zillion of those God shocks in my sobriety. And it's like, and I've had an amazing, amazing sobriety, amazing journey. But a couple of the things that she had me do, and it's like I'm kind of running out of time, so I want to share this because I also want you to know that there isn't anything that we can't walk through. When I said that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and it's because I have felt like that in sobriety. My daughter Kylie, that I love so much. I got her back and put her through high school, and when she was 18, I got a phone call at work, and a friend said, if you don't go get Kylie, she's going to die. And I said, what do you mean she's going to die? And they said, she's putting a needle in her arm every day. And what you guys taught me was, I called another member, and we went and we 12-stepped her. And I told my sponsor, she would ask me things like, she's like, do you think anything would take you out? And I go, my baby girl will take me out. But that's not what happened. What happened is that the women rallied around me, and they gave me the courage to do the things that I needed to do. And I got her into treatment, and it's like, you know, and she went to treatment, she didn't get it. She didn't get it, and every time she'd get a couple months and she'd go back out, and it's like, and it was a struggle for her, and every time she'd go back out, it would be worse. And I would hear things, you know, this last time that she went out, it's like, you know, I heard that, you know, she was homeless on the streets in a horrible part of Fresno, and she was barefoot and dirty, and she had track marks in her neck, and I thought she was going to die. you know, but I just kept walking through it, and what I did was what she taught me. I kept going to meetings, and I kept talking to people, and I talked to my sponsor, and I loved her. She says, stop trying to be her sponsor and just be her mom. Someday she's going to meet a Kathy that can sponsor her, but you're not her sponsor. And so I had to learn how to separate the two, and I had to get some acceptance, and I had to give her to God, which was the hardest thing that I've ever had to do, even though I could turn my life over. For you to ask me to turn my baby girl's life over was virtually impossible. But I learned how to do that. I had to physically learn how to do it. I had a God box, and I would write down her name every day, and I would physically put her name on a piece of paper in the God box, because it had to be a physical thing for me. I couldn't just say, God, take her, because it just didn't feel real enough. And, you know, and I thought she was going to die. I thought she was going to die. And 5 months ago yesterday, she called me and wanted to meet at a Starbucks, and I hadn't seen her in like 3 months. And when I got to the Starbucks, it was all dope talk. And I just sat there and I listened to her, and it's like, and I'm like, there's no way that this child's ever going to get sober. I didn't say ever, but she wasn't ready. You know, she sat there, and it's like, and this person was screwing over, and that person was screwing over, and this dope man, that dope man, and, you know, and I left that store, Starbucks, and I felt a little hopeless for her. Not for me, but for her. And this is why we never give up hope. Because the next morning at 9 o'clock, I got a phone call from her, and she's like, Mom, I need to get clean. And yesterday, she turned 5. Or has 5 months. Not turned 5. I think that Alcoholics Anonymous is magical, and I don't overthink it. I don't pretend to understand how it works, but what I know is that I hear miracles in these rooms every single day. I hear people share, it's like their experience, strength, and hope, and it's like in things that they walk through and they don't drink. And I just think it's a beautiful thing, because we all would just be a freaking mess if we were out there right now. It's like, and you know it, it's like, because we didn't come in here because we were having fun out there. You know, that's not why I'm here. It was no more fun. So it's like, I'm so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I could have just said so much more once I get started. It's like, I'm so satisfied being here. And it's like, and I just want to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for the beautiful life that I have today. And thank you for asking me to share.